Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast about the Doom Patrol, which is a comic, and one day it'll be a TV show, and we're sort of in between, because sometimes it's a comic, but it's also talking about TV show stuff. So it's about the Doom Patrol, which is a DC property. They're a bunch of misfit superheroes. They're a bit weird, they're a bit fun, sometimes they're a bit edgy, but that's what we talk about.
Are you explaining us or them?
I really don't know anymore. The line is so blurred.
Yeah. It's all blurry, yes. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvonGarve. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, run by our fellow Doom bro Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
And I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, H-I-X. And we also have the Sentient Show Twitter account, Wilfred. Hi, Wilfred.
Hello, humans.
And Wilfred is at WFD Pod, and we are sponsored by Comicosity.
Yes, look, a fantastic site for all your comic book news, previews, reviews, just comic book love in general. Something really interesting I found on there this week under their Comics Latinx, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, interview header. They had an interview with Gonzalo Alvarez. He's done a comic called The Legend of Pollo Man, a Mexican folklore adventure focusing on the gods and monsters from the Aztec pantheon. And it's about a boy named Emmanuel who goes on this quest to become Pollo Man the Sun Warrior.
Oh.
And he's vanquishing terrifying Latin American legends like El Chupacabra.
Oh.
I've mispronounced that, I know. I'm so sorry. But yeah, Gonzalo decided to do something about the complete lack of Mexican fantasy universes, and he said, you know, he became the change he wanted to see out there in the world. So he went and created his own comic about it. But like, he's got plans to bring like Mesoamerican imagery and stories and legends into like, he's got tabletop games planned, he's got video games planned, he's got cartoons planned. He's like, he's really kicking it. It looks really great. It's kind of like, did you ever see The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Walker?
My son has, probably.
Well, it's got that kind of cartoony-ish vibe to it, but it's full of really bright, vibrant colors as well. It looks really interesting. So you can check that out and a lot of other interesting stuff on comicosity.com.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good.
Awkward pause.
Don't you throw to the week in comics?
Sure, I'll throw to the week in comics. Although, it's been a bit more than a week. It's been about a month.
It has.
Since we've done Waiting for Doom. It's been, I could call it a comedy of errors, but it's, not all of it's been a comedy. Let me see. My darling Kylie's car died. God, that's a tongue twister. So a car died, then my grandmother passed away when we were due to record, and then my niece Hannah was born, and then what else happened? And then Paul, your partner Sam, she became sick.
Yeah.
And then just last week, when we thought we were going to record, Rifty's computer died.
Wow.
So it's been an action-packed month.
Lots of comings and goings.
Yeah, yeah. So amongst all of that, did you get to read anything good at all, Paul?
Did I ever? I've been reading Copra by Michelle Fife, which is... picked up volumes 4 and 5 at Heroes Con. Yes, I went to Heroes Con. We don't need
to
read.
Did you go to Heroes Con?
No, I went to Heroes Con.
Have we discussed this?
Yeah, we did. And, oh, well, I'm in love with this comic. It's so good. It's so, you know, it's, yeah, it's twisty and turny. It's, it, you know, it gives me all, it rings all the bells that I want rung from my days reading The Suicide Squad.
Right.
Back in the classic run in the 80s. And it's good stuff. And highly recommended. And it's still coming out. So if you haven't read it and you're not sure what the appeal is, check it out. It's, you know, it's like superhero comics, but they're sort of off the chain. you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I guess, indie superheroics.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
You know, Michel does everything himself, you know, and it looks gorgeous. And, yeah, as you said, it's a great read. And I must admit, I'm way behind on Capra. I think I've got the first two books, but, yeah, I need to get caught up.
Yeah.
So...
Mm. Yeah. What about you? What have you been reading? Do you read?
I got caught up on some Justice League from like the end of the not Snyder series that finished a couple of months back because I'm behind on everything.
The priest stuff?
Yes, yes. The stuff where they took on Deathstroke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. I'm 4 issues into Eternity Girl by Mags Visaggio.
Ah.
So that's an interesting read. And Sonny Liu on the art. Love his stuff. I read the first issue of Justice League No Justice. And, yeah, I'm not quite sure about that. It's, yeah. Mm. I mean, it's got lots of, you know, superheroes in there and it looks cool and that, but I'm kind of like, yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah, no, I read No Justice and there's had a few things I didn't like. I'm right. Feeling a bit better about the ongoing that came after that. I've been...
Okay.
That's better.
Oh, good.
But yeah, No Justice. It's a character I really like and it does terrible things to that character. So.
Oh, okay. No spoilers. I'll see if I can figure out which one it is. What else? A stack of Detective Comics. That was really good fun. And a bit of Saga and the Terrifics.
Ooh.
Oh, I just read issue 4 of the Terrifics. My God, that's fun. It's like, oh, and Doc Shayna on art. Well, you know how much I love his stuff. So
cool.
Yeah, it's yeah, well, yeah, I've kept myself busy with the comics slowly but surely in the last month.
Mm.
So, but hopefully we'll get back on track and remember how to speak proper good and stuff.
Speaking of speaking good, let's talk about the news and we'll go on News Patrol.
Let's.
Well, if you're a Doom Patrol fan and you've been following the news, it's fair to say that a hell of a lot's been happening. So we have some... we'll start with some small stuff. Diane Guerrero from Orange is the New Black has been cast to play Crazy Jane in the ongoing Doom Patrol TV show. So, I'm unfamiliar with that actress, but I am very familiar with Crazy Jane.
Yes. I have not seen her in anything before either, so...
Yeah, but hopefully she's sitting down with a big pile of DC Comics and getting familiar herself. So
let's hope so. Yeah.
Now we haven't had solid word that Kelsey Grammer is playing the Chief. That's I think that's still in the unconfirmed rumor pile.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have some other little news, and this was a Deadline exclusive. Brendan Fraser has been cast to play Robot Man.
What?
Yeah. So he is doing the voice of Robot Man, and he's going to do the voice, but they're going to have another guy. Riley Shanahan has been cast to do the role of Robot, so he's going to do the body.
Mm.
So it's like a Doom Patrol comic, isn't it? One guy doing the brain and the body separate, but
yes.
Yeah, they'll combine them through the magic of special effects and editing and audio and stuff.
And I'm pretty sure I read that Brendan's going to be playing Cliff Steele, the race car driver, as well.
Yeah, in flashbacky type stuff. So, yes. Yeah. And they say the show is going to be written by Jeremy Carver, and it's a reimagining of DC's strangest group of outcast Robot Man, which is Brendan Fraser, Negative Man, uncast, Elasti Woman, which is April Balbi, and Crazy Jane, Diane Guerrero. And they're led by the mysterious Calder, not Niles. And they're called into action by the ultimate hero for the digital age, Cyborg, who's played by Joven Wade, who I think he was in Doctor Who in an episode or something.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think about Brendan Fraser?
I think it will work. I think it's a surprise casting choice, but I think he can do it. I've always liked the stuff I've seen him in. Well, the majority of it, but I think he can do a grumpy guy who still cares about his teammates. I think he'll be able to do the voice of that pretty well.
Yeah, I'm actually really pleased with his casting. I mean, he's got a great voice. You know, George of the Jungle.
Yes.
Yeah, and what's his face from the Mummy films? I mean, really good. And I saw him recently in The Affair, where he was playing quite a chilling prison guard. So.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, so he's got the acting chops and he's got the character, and you know, and for Robot Man, it's you want a working class voice, particularly. So
mm-hmm.
yeah. So
I think he's going to do really well.
Hmm. Is that it for news? Ah, no. Now, some of you who are listening to this show for a long time may remember that there used to be a Doom Patrol comic.
Really?
Apparently, yeah.
Right.
And surprisingly, a new issue has been solicited. Yeah, so Doom Patrol number 12, the solicitation has come out, and this is what it says. So it's written by Gerard Way, art by Dan McDade, cover by Nick Darrington, a variant cover by Dan McDade. And it says, a quest for adventurers levels 16 to 20. Far beyond the mortal realms, the Reynolds family must overcome their familial challenges in order to claim Lucius's rightful place as the ruler of the Demonscape, or the Daemonscape, depending on how you want to say that.
Mm.
A place of horror, conflict, and sorcery. It is filled with traps, beasts, difficult challenges, the five demon lords, or daemon lords, of the Crystal Hells, and Agantha, a demon trapped in the body of a dead squirrel. It's a re-solicit. it's available on the 31st of the 10th, 2018.
At this stage.
It's a $3.99 comic, and it's recommended for mature readers, but we're going to read it anyway.
That never gets old.
It doesn't. And the cover is, it's like a... what do you call it? A source book for a role-playing game.
Yeah, it's like an old adventure module for like the old D&D games, you know, back in the 80s.
And yeah.
It looks really cool.
Yeah, it shows Lucius and... what's the wife's name? It's been so long.
Valerie
and the son.
Sam.
Sam the dad. Yeah, and they're all...
Gosh, I'm not having you on my Doom Patrol trivia team.
No. Well, I'm old and senile, so, you know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, but they're facing like a red giant orc-looking monster, and but it looks like a cover of a little book, and it's got, you know, it's got some nice design elements, and it's pretty spiffy. But, yeah, Nick Darrington, gone.
Yeah, well, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's unsurprising an artist of that talent can't sit around not drawing, so he's gone off to draw, you know, whatever's going, like, Batman with Bendis, as if that's going to go anywhere for him.
Yeah.
But I mean, seriously, wish Nick all the best. I mean, he did his, you know, he did fabulous work on the Doom Patrol, and mm-hmm. it's unsurprising that with the schedule being so crap that he hasn't been able to stick around. So
yeah,
but yeah, he's one of my favorite artists, and I look forward to reading other stuff by him and seeing him go on to bigger and better things. Well, bigger things. Yeah.
Oh, look, he's definitely got the talent, you know. And yeah, I will miss his work on Doom Patrol for sure. But yeah, he's, you know, he's going to be around for years, you know.
Yep.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. But I mean, there is, you know, there's word that Doom Patrol is continuing under Gerard Way. So, you know.
Really?
Yeah. That's the word on the street, or on the con circuit, as some of our spies in America have told us. So.
Okay.
Yeah. But let's bring it back to the TV show, because the new segment can get bigger. It looks like that the cast that appears in the Doom Patrol in the Titan series is not going to be entirely the same as the one in the TV show of their own. So in the Titan series, Jake Michaels is playing Cliff Steele, Robot Man. But April Balby, who's been cast as Elastigirl, Rita Farr, she is continuing between both shows. And we still don't know if Bruno Bichir is going to stay on as the Chief, or whether Kelsey Grammer's stolen that from him.
Yeah. So. It'll be good to get some confirmation on that either way. But, yeah, I'm a bit surprised that they're changing the cast slightly between the shows, but... You know, it's above our pay grade, so...
Yeah, and Dwayne Murphy is playing Negative Man in the Titans show, so... But it says that him and Cliff Steele and, all the Doom Patrol characters are in for 9 episodes on the Titans, which, wow, I didn't think I'd want to watch 9 episodes of the Titans after seeing the trailer, but there we go.
Yeah, the 9 episodes is surprising, but very odd. Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, is that ticking that I hear, Mike?
Bloody oath it is, and that can only mean it's a damn doom clock.
Whoa.
So yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's been 20 weeks since the last new Doom Patrol book was in our hot hands, that being issue 11 of Volume 6, the lead-in to Milk Wars, which we discussed back in episode 122. And as Paul mentioned during News Patrol, issue 12 is, at this stage, scheduled for release on October 31st, 2018. At this stage, just a mere 9 weeks away.
Wow.
At this stage. but yes, this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale August 31st of 2005 with a cover date of October of that year, from here $2.50 American, was issue 15 of Doom Patrol Volume 4 from John Byrne, Doug Hazelwood, Jared K. Fletcher, Alex Blayart, and Mike Carlin.
Wow.
Titled The Man Who Lived a Lifetime, this story saw Rita and Cliff investigate a mystery metahuman who was draining the life force from people in Florida.
Oh.
Yeah. As you do. But yeah, we are actually yet to cover this issue. That's a change. But we should do so in the next few weeks, probably around episode 130, because we're getting close to the end of that run.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. I mean, But anyway, yes, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
It began with the origin of his comic book fandom.
This is the very first comic book I have ever read, and also ignited the spark of my comic book collecting over the course of a 1974 weekend.
Professor Zoom Yukinori led an ongoing expedition through his favorite single-issue comic book stories from the Bronze Age of DC Comics.
Balance of Power, Have Horse, Will Fly, Solomon Grundy, Wins on a Monday, Superman's Unbeatable Rival, Green Lantern, Master Criminal of the 25th Century.
With unique celebrity guest perspectives in an ambitious attempt to set this program apart from other comic book review podcasts.
Call me Terror Man.
Solomon Grundy am co-host this time.
I am Lanos, the lexical archive of minutia, expositions, and origins.
Goodbye, me am Bizarro.
I am Libra.
This is Aya from the Green Lantern.
It is I, the Reverse Flash.
Which had ended with the destruction of the universe. Or has it?
Warren Thunderation, are we?
I regret to say that you are my prisoner.
Without our interspatial time conveyor, we are all essentially trapped here.
Can't summon the willpower necessary for my power ring to pull me free.
For nearly 2 decades, I had carried her ghost within my heart.
Experience the wonder.
Great wings of Mercury!
Of an all-new season.
Solomon Grundy, fat little pointy-eared man before.
Let us get back to the story, shall we?
Down, down. And approach
of the Done in One Wonders podcast wonder show. Only on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Allow me, Entity Terra Man.
That does it. They ain't messing with no timing lines ever again.
And now it's the part of the show which we call Doomsplaining, and the script calls it Doomsplaining too, which knows how I'm. This is how I know how I'm up to it. But we are talking about 2 issues of the Doom Patrol this week, and we're doing Volume 3, Issue 15 and 16. So,
Hooray.
Mike, do you want to take us through the first one, Issue 15?
Oh, do I ever? Doom Patrol number 15 from Volume 3. Oh, it's a shame this stuff isn't available more easily in this day and age for people.
It's a bloody outrage.
It's a shame. It's an outrage. Anyway, it was cover dated February of 2003, but actually went on sale December 4th of 2002 for $2.50 American, edited by Andrew Helfer, written by John R. Cody. Tan Eng Huat did the art, and Bob Lappin was on letters with Dave McCraig on colors. And the cover of this one, well, it's got poor old Robot Man looking a bit shell-shocked, and he has the rest of the team sort of fighting in the top of his head.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a bit distressing.
It sure is.
He's got a lot on his mind.
Hey,
and it says...
You can't even see his mind.
No, you can't. It's gone. It's gone. And it says beneath the logo of the book, Headcase. It's poor old Cliff. Yeah. Anyway, as we dive into this issue, when we last saw this iteration of the Doom Patrol in issues 13 and 14, which we covered in episode 125 from July 2018, the team had somehow been transported into the bodies of the original Doom Patrol and took on the Brotherhood of Evil. How did that happen, you ask? Well, first, shame on you for not listening to that episode. Shame, shame, shame. And second, it was either a magic tie clasp or drugs or a strange old man who wanted to show Cliff Steele just how much he'd actually grown as Robot Man and that he wasn't a relic. Or maybe it was all three, but probably drugs. God, Paul, I wish you had just shut up and gotten over the drugs in that story. Anyway, issue 15 opens with Cliff Steele recalling memories and dreams. The car race crash that cost him his human body, meeting the Doom Patrol, choking the chief, Niles called out and threatening to kill him, before team members old and new are mashed up into new entities, and asking him what's wrong. As Cliff describes feelings of claustrophobia that only subside once he's alone again in this dreamscape, we learn that he's telling all of this to Dr. Kolodenko, who's in the middle of repairs to Cliff's head. When asked, Kolodenko believes that Cliff's dreams are about him not wanting to be alone, yet he always finds excuses to push others away. Nailed it! God, it's so obvious when Kolodenko puts it like that. Anyway, with the repairs done and his head now closed up, Cliff makes his way through the kitchen, greeting Charlene, Ava, and Vic, before finding Ted watching TV in the next room. And as Cliff tries to start a serious discussion with Ted, an ad for an exciting new TV show appears on screen. In a time when we need heroes most, the Doom Patrol, Wednesday nights this summer on WGBS. Cliff and Ted stare at each other, slack-jawed. As Ted unsuccessfully tries to place a call through to Thayer Joss, their previous boss, Cliff tries to calm him down, saying there's not much that can be done considering Cliff sold Thayer the license to the Doom Patrol rights, and he can do whatever he wants with it. With Larry Trainer out in space somewhere, the chief not being in this universe, and with Rita Farr being dead, Cliff is the only one who can contest the rights, and he's just not interested. He's more interested in helping people. As is Ted, but Ted admits he wants credit and praise for it. He's not perfect, but he likes the praise. Why can't Cliff understand that? Cliff doesn't know what to say. And Ted snaps, remarking, "Nah, of course you don't. Maybe that Undertaker Devil Crow was right. Maybe you ain't got a soul." Now Cliff snaps, throwing Ted against the wall, telling him to take it back. But then Ava snaps. A lot of snapping going on. And she appears behind Cliff, covered in a weird demonic armor suit thing, ensnaring him in tendrils and throwing him through the ceiling as she roars, "Never touch him again. I will kill you if you do." Ooh, angsty. Later, Cliff begins packing his things, ready to leave the team despite their efforts to try to sort things out, including an actual apology from Ted. But Cliff's mind is made up. He doesn't want to live with freaks anymore, and he's the biggest freak of all. His mental health is too important, and he needs to interact with sane, normal people. As Cliff walks away from DPHQ, Kolodenko recalls their earlier conversation and comments that Cliff always finds an excuse.
No.
With Cliff gone, Charlene yells at Ava, "This is all your fault," while being barely able to keep her heat powers under control. Before long, she and the smitten Vic are heading away in a taxi. Ted watches them from a window, commenting that a few months ago it would have been him storming off, but now everyone is leaving him. Except for Ava, who embraces him and reminds him that she's here for him. And as she says that, one of her fingers turns into a purple tentacle. Meanwhile, in the taxi that just left, Charlene is becoming more and more agitated over the fact that the team has fallen apart. Despite Vic's attempt to calm her, her heat powers start to flare up, and as the driver says he'll have to let them out, Charlene really loses it, and the issue ends with the taxi going up in a ball of flame. Now, just quickly to clarify, the comment about the Undertaker Devil Crow that Ted mentioned was in reference to the demon Realm, who the team fought back in issue 12 of this run, which we covered in episode 121 from April of 2018. Realm mentioned that he needed souls to survive, and while he was able to drive the rest of the team to the brink of despair in order for them to give up their souls, he couldn't do the same thing with Robot Man, and Realm believed this was because Cliff Steel had been dead for many years and his soul was long departed. So that's where Ted's getting all that from. And also another good episode you should listen to. As all our episodes are good ones you should listen to. But anyway, Paul, I digress. What did you think of issue 15?
Oh, what an issue. I mean, I love the opening, which has the, you know, Cliff's memory of his car crash, which, I mean, I'm no expert on race cars, but they look like really old race cars, like the 1960s.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
I'm hoping they're the racing cars that were around in 1963 when the Doom Patrol debuted. Yeah, but that's really sweet. And then, you know, I think it's easy to forget that Cliff is a human sometimes. You know, my wife was talking about Brendan Fraser playing Cliff, and I said, oh, he's a human. And she said, no, I thought he was a robot. And no, he's a man, et cetera.
He's a man who is a robot.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Man who is a robot.
Mm.
Yeah, but this is like the point in the movie where, you know, the story's been going on for a while and it's getting towards the, you know, the finale, and this is where the team are at their lowest.
Yes.
Everything is going bad. Like, you know, it seemed like a fun, you know, two-issue romp where they, you know, switch bodies, went back in time to be the original Doom Patrol. But there's fallout from it. Like, Ava seems to have had a gutful of, you know, all the zaniness and, you know, weirdness that comes with Cliff being around, the real Cliff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, everyone else is sort of really relying on Cliff, and, you know, Cliff doesn't want to have a bar of it. And, yeah, it's really sad. But, yeah, Ava really goes too far, doesn't she?
She goes berserk in this, and, like, we'll get Wilfred to put up a pic of the armor suit she's wearing that's made from the, you know, her inner monster. But, yeah, she goes nuts. She just loses it completely. And it's as you said, this is the team at their lowest point. It's not good.
Yeah, and, I mean, it really shows that, you know, Ava, you know, she switched from, you know, being emotionally detached to completely infatuated with Ted.
Yeah, that's an interesting development. And poor old Vic, I mean, he's clearly been smitten with Charlene for a while, and he's trying to get her to remain calm on that, because he knows that she's starting to overheat. You know, it's not the first time in the series that he's noticed that it happens. When she gets, you know, when she gets fired up, she literally gets fired up.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens in the worst possible way. On the final page.
Yeah, but, I mean, poor Vic. She is just oblivious to his attentions, no matter how blatantly obvious he is.
The other thing I'm wondering is that, okay, this is issue 15. This series only goes for 22 issues. So I'm wondering in the, you know, behind the curtain, how far ahead the creative team would have known about, you know, how much writing was on the wall about, you know, the potential future or lack thereof of this particular volume.
Yeah, no, I'm no writer man, but I feel like, you know, this is very deliberately, let's tear the team apart so we can put them back together again and, you know, have a nice satisfying finale. So,
yeah.
You know, and they really are torn apart. Like,
oh, God, yeah.
Cliff getting the blame, Ava hating Cliff, Ted. Ted's really interesting because he wants to be leader, but, you know, you can see here that he's really shocked when Cliff walks away, and he doesn't want that to happen.
Yeah. It's interesting. I like that he admits that he wants to help, but he wants the glory for it as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's nice to finally see him be honest and say, yeah, you know, of course I want the fame and the money and the, you know, all the goods that come with it. So... I really like this run. I really like the way the characters develop over time, and it's I wish we could somehow gift it to everyone, but it's not available digitally.
Yeah, and you know, yeah. I think one of the big pities of the Gerard Way run was, you know, he admitted in interviews that he never read this run. Like, you know, not that I think, you know, there's he doesn't need to lift anything from it, but I think it just fleshes it all out a bit. And there's it shows that you know, you can have, you know, almost a completely different team and it still feels like the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
You know, they're like the X-Men, except they're not as sexy, they're not as together, you know, nothing really goes right for them.
They have their own brand of sexy, thank you very much. Look, the X-Men don't have Rita Farr. You know,
no, they don't. But no, this team don't either. But, I mean...
you know what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, their adventures are, you know, they're not controlling their own destiny. Their adventures are not what they want. You know, they're not the, you know, the missions that give them glory and public attention. They're the weird things in the dark that come at personal trauma and cost. You know, that's what they deal with. You know, and they're all hurting from it. Like, yeah, and their powers, aren't ideal, and they're not, you know, super cool and under control. Like, you know, Fever, you know, Shailene, the fact that she can't stop her explosive, you know, flames come with her explosive temper, or, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and usually she's, you know, so repressed that, you know, she's just a powder keg here.
Yeah, yeah. It's breaking point for all of them. And some of them go about it in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
Particularly Shailene and Ava, you know. I think they unleash the most. And it's kind of interesting to see the guys or the men in the group almost take a step back, whilst the women are the ones, you know, sort of really venting and letting loose.
Yeah. So speaking of which, there's another issue. Shall we have a look at that one?
Let's do it.
Okay, so this one, it's Doom Patrol issue 16 from volume 3. And this one, it was cover dated March 2003. It actually came out on the 8th of January 2003. So, you know, that's a nice thing to get at the start of the year. $2.50, edited by Andy Helfer. And the story is titled What to Do. And on the cover, you can see Shailene sitting on a bench in a hospital. And she is basically on fire from the back, and she's burning up a poster.
Yeah.
And there's several very concerned and you know, possibly life threatened staff looking on. Yeah, and there's an orderly on the floor, and there's, you know, a syringe and some pills and things on the floor. Yeah, and it's quite reflective of what goes on. And this one is written by John Arcudi again, art by Tang and Hewitt, lettered by Bob Lappin, and coloured by Dave McCaig, not McCraig.
Oh, my apologies.
Anyway, let's get into it. So, I love doing the second issue. I don't have to do a little recap. Ted sits on the floor of his room, trying to will himself to see further into the future than just his usual 60 seconds. Ava knocks on the door to tell him that someone from Jost Enterprises is on the phone, and Ted tells her to get rid of him somehow. Ava returns to the phone and tells the taller to go to hell before going full monster to smash the handset and the entire desk into debris. From this, we switch to China in 1949, as an old man is carting a mysterious box from Zhejiang to Yalongjiang River, as he has been paid to do by Minister Yan. His family warn him that these capitalist ways will not last in China and things are changing. In the present? So look. That's weird. In the present again, Shailene is waiting at the hospital where Vic has been admitted into the ICU after she blew up the taxi. The nurse asks Shailene if she'll fill in the required paperwork. Plus, there's the matter of it being standard practice to notify the police in circumstances such as this. Shailene can't deal with it, and she asks for a minute to think. As she sits on the bench, freaking out, she is approached by a man dressed in an ill-fitting purple superhero outfit who informs her that he can't help her. A nurse leads the man away, and he's identified as Mr. Rogers. Back at Bruno's, the Doom Patrol headquarters, Dr. Colin Dentico returns to the team headquarters, but Ava ignores him knocking on the locked door. Ted, desperate to see how to improve his view of the future, concentrates till eventually he triggers a precognitive seizure, and Ava bursts in to see him vibrating uncontrollably on the spot. Back at the hospital, Shailene finds the purple garb man, Mr. Rogers, in the cafeteria and approaches him. He declares that there is no Esteban Rogers anymore, only the purple purposeless. And she asks if he used to be a superhero. He said, not at all, just the opposite. I'm not strong or fast. I'm not brave or bold. I'm sub-heroic. I'm a sub-hero. Would you like to hear my origin story? In 1969, Esteban Rojas was fighting in the steamy jungles of Vietnam. Special Forces Long Range Reconnaissance Patrol, the best of the best, strong as an ox, smart as a whip. Then the Air Force started dropping a defoliant on these jungles, exposing Rojas to the dreaded Agent Orange with all its ill effects. And to this day, my life has never been the same. And Shailene asks him, "That's horrible. Do you have cancer?" And he says, "No, hay fever."
Sorry. Continue.
Shailene looks fairly ticked off at this news. And he says, "So I asked the Marines to cryogenically freeze my body until a cure could be found for my hay fever, but they refused." And she said, "Well, I'd say that was pretty smart." And she said, "Absolutely. Now you understand. Remember, I told you I can't help you. I mean it. You want to help your friend, but you can't. You must not. You have to be strong." And she says, "What do you mean? What do I have to be strong? When a friend has been hurt or is in trouble, what is the hardest thing in the world to do? Nothing. Do nothing. It is the only way to avoid all risk. How can anybody accuse you of doing the wrong thing if you don't do anything ever at all? The world would be a better place if everybody just did nothing. Such is my credo. Do nothing. Do nothing." Ah.
Oh, dear.
Meanwhile, Ted struggles with his future sight, and he sees Ava split as a human, a monster, and a skeleton all at once. Colin Denko comes in, and he appears as an old man, a young man, and a robot man all at once. And then he sees a city of flying cars, etc. Colin Denko administers a sedative because he is shaking uncontrollably. And once he comes around, Colin Denko theorizes that he's seeing alternate futures, multiple possibilities at once. He's in the quantum realm. Ted grumbles about the bleakness of one future, let alone multiple. Meanwhile, back at the hospital, Shailene is considering the philosophy of doing nothing when the nurse returns and tells her that Vic is going to be okay. She relaxes and embraces the doing nothing all the way approach, but fails to notice the cab driver pointing out her out to the newly arrived police officers.
Mm-hmm.
We have another interlude sent in Saigon in 1969, and the Chinese box is in the hands of a general, and a woman wants to post it to California. And he assists her to make sure it gets delivered to Wai Lung Sung in Esperanza, California.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the present, at a gas station on a quiet road in a desert, a driver refuels his pickup and chats to his passenger, a hitchhiker he has picked up earlier. They depart the gas station, and further up the road, Cliff Steele is trudging along, admitting that he hasn't planned this very well. He has no money, he doesn't even know if his brother still lives at his old address, plus no one is likely to give him a lift. As if to prove the point, the driver with the hitchhiker approaches, preparing to stop for a second passenger, when he gets a real good look at Cliff and then speeds up. He says, "Damn, can't believe I almost stopped. Did you see that friggin' guy? Oh, geez, I'm sorry, man, I didn't mean..." And we see his passenger, and it's Tycho, the blind man the team fought back in issues 5 and 6. Wow, so this one is, you know, things aren't improving for the team, are they?
Not entirely, no. I think the highlight, well, for me, is the purple Purposeless. That seemed like a very Morrison-esque addition. Like the bizarre, well, not superhero, sub-hero. It reminded me a little bit of the Identity Addict.
Yeah.
Volume 2. Just a completely bizarre power, if you can call it that, as an interesting credo to live by that he has.
Yeah.
To do nothing.
And he's an overweight guy. He looks like he's got greasy hair. He's got a moustache. And he's wearing like a purple... It looks like he stole an outfit off one of the Wonder Twins.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And it doesn't fit right.
not really, no. He's showing a little bit of flesh in the worst possible way.
Yeah, but he's got a double P on the front, you know, a bit like the Daredevil symbol. So.
Yeah, so he's put some effort into it, despite him not wanting to do anything. So, yeah, that was... This issue had clearly a bit more humour than the previous one. And just mainly with that character, so...
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that, you know, Shailene finally relaxes just as she's about to be arrested and she doesn't even realize. And, I mean, the return of Tycho. So last time we saw Tycho, he was trying to do things with demons and the Doom Patrol stopped him with the help of the other Doom Patrol. But he got away. He snuck away. He had a giant sword. That's what I remember mostly about him.
Yeah, check out episode 81 from January of 2017 for those issues, because yeah, there were Chinese demons and giant swords and ancient armor. There was this Doom Patrol and then a newer Doom Patrol, both fighting the demons and the ghosts. It was crazy shit. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and we get the box, which is obviously somehow connected to Tycho, and the fact that it, you know, it started off in China in 1949, and, you know, the man is being paid to deliver it, and there's this, you know, this vague hint that, you know, things are about to change in China, and obviously communism is about to rise. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the next time we see it, it's in Saigon, just before Vietnam. So, anything else?
It's another great issue in this run. I did like the reappearance of Tycho. It's been like, I guess, a year since we saw him in, you know, the timeline of this run, so it'll be good to see him back again. He gave them a fair bit of trouble last time around, so he's a good, I guess, recurring villain for them. But yeah, just and Ted, we can't not talk about Ted and his powers just going berserk, because it adds another element to him as well. And I love the fact that he made an appearance in Volume 5 of the Doom Patrol in an issue that I think Keith Giffen wrote and drew. And it was all about how he's seen multiple alternate, you know, timelines and universes, and now that his powers have slightly gone haywire, he came back in Volume 5 and had a small adventure kind of based around that same sort of stuff, you know, alternate timelines and alternate universes and that. And that makes me disappointed that Gerard Way didn't touch on, or hasn't so far touched on, anything from this volume. And I was really glad to see when Keith Giffen did it, you know, so I'm just like, you know, Gerard, you could have done something, or you still could.
Yeah. Yeah. No, real pity.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, just, you know, it's I really love this run. It's so good, you know.
Quick update, that was in the middle of the Vietnam War in 1969.
Right, okay.
So, I mean, I haven't really got much more to say about this one. I liked it. It's a bit sad for the team, and I'm, you know, but as always, I'm, you know, it's a page turner, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yep, same here.
The creative team are rock solid. I mean, Tangen Hewitt, he's done, you know, all the issues except for the two where he, you know, where they had Seth Fisher do them, and that was deliberate, so.
Yeah, but great team, great run, this one, really is, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on.
Let's.
I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren of the Rad Adventures Network.
We're a married couple who enjoy great stories of all kinds, including adventures, mysteries, science fiction, and fantasy.
Please join us for a variety of podcasts focused on a range of pop culture topics.
Trekker Talk is about 23rd century bounty hunter Mercy St. Clair from the comic Trekker by writer and artist Ron Randall. It's a blend of classic sci-fi adventures and noir mysteries set in a retro future.
Xenozoic Xenophiles is about the comic Xenozoic Tales by writer and artist Mark Schultz. It's a post-apocalyptic adventure series filled with Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
Warlord Worlds covers the many comics of writer and artist Mike Grell, including The Warlord, John Sable, Green Arrow, and the Legion of Superheroes.
Sensational Sleuths, where we talk about favorite mystery novels, movies, and TV shows.
Fantastic Fantasies, where we share our favorite fantasy films and books.
And Amazing Adventures, where we discuss action-packed adventure stories.
Listen on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Or visit radadventuresnetwork.com to find all of our shows and links to our social media pages.
That's RAD, R-A-D, which is short for Ruth and Darren.
And now it's time to dive into the Mailbag of Doom, where last time on the show, so like a month ago, we asked, who's your favorite comic character who's switched from villain to hero or vice versa? First off, we heard from Relatively Geeky at Relatively _ Geeky on Twitter. So yes, Professor Allen chimed in with Doctor Doom, except has he ever been a villain? And he gave us a photo of him with, I believe that's Michelle Fife holding up a commission of Doctor Doom that he did for Allen. Sorry, Professor Allen.
We heard from Ryan Daly, who does podcasts on the Cheers cast. This latest one, he's doing a TV show as a podcast. And he sent us a picture of a man in his underpants.
That's Sir Ryan.
No, I think it's Namor the Submariner. So yes, he's a villain sometimes and he's a hero sometimes. You know, particularly if there's, you know, some Nazis needing punching, he's a hero.
Yeah. Or if Sue storms around, you know, then he's a villain.
Ooh, yes. Yeah. A sexy villain.
In his underpants. Jesse at No, I said hello, it's Jessica.
Hey.
Former guest co-host way back when we first started the show. She said Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, both with trouble or problematic backgrounds, their relationship and choices to work for Downtrodden or Earth has pushed them to anti-hero status, with now Harley will be a key character in King's new Crisis story with Poison Ivy as a connection to Sanctuary.
Yeah, I mean, those two characters have an interesting path. I mean, Poison Ivy has been, you know, just a straightforward villain and then a very nuanced sort of in-between character and, you know, yeah, and certainly has a massive following.
Yeah, true.
We heard from Moby1, at Shmoby1 on the Twitter, and he said, the Plutonian from Irredeemable, which is the Mark Waid sort of Superman riff comic where if Superman went evil, what would happen?
Right.
Yeah, very good. Very good stuff.
Coffee and Comics. Clinton at Coffee and Comics blog said Black Adam, Magneto, or Magneto, for those that want to say it wrong, Hal Jordan and Bucky Barnes.
Oh, yeah, they've all been on both sides.
Yeah. So I saw something earlier on Twitter today that was about the whole Magneto versus Magneto thing, and it just bugs me.
Why?
It really does. Well, it's like... His power of magnetism, not magnetism, but, you know. Anyway, sorry.
Get off my lawn.
I'm yelling at clouds.
And then we heard from Frack at Fractures, and he said, Mento. He was a pain in the ass throughout Doom Patrol and the Teen Titans, but redeemed himself by losing what little sanity he had when Constantine asked him to follow the Black Pearl in Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. And then he sent us a picture of some of that stuff, and he managed to warn them of impending doom before losing it completely. So, yes, he blew up his mask and had smoke coming out of his ears.
Right.
Yeah, no, good story, Mento. We know you love Mento.
Yep. A cheek 12 rim tin. our friend Kevin replied with Rogue from the X-Men. So yeah, she started out in the Brotherhood of Mutants, and then ended up joining the X-Men after a while. So yeah. Now I'm getting confused. They're the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Not good mutants.
Not the good mutants. Yeah.
No.
X-Men.
We heard from Jeffrey Brown at Tosigo, and he said Robot Man. I believe he's referring to the non-Cliff Steel Robot Man, the Golden Age Robot Man, because he was basically a hero in the Golden Age, and then James Robinson did his story called The Golden Age, and he was a vile villain.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I was going to say, Jeffrey, I was you raised my eyebrow with that one for a second there, dude.
That's the only way it makes sense for me, if it's that character.
Yeah.
And in which case, I support that answer, because that's a really good story.
Yeah, okay. Phew. Alrighty. Tim Price at TimPrice17 said Rogue, definitely, and gave us a picture of Rogue from the X-Men again, so another vote for Rogue.
And not Rouge.
Not Rouge, no.
Our pal Sergeant America said, Reed Richard in the Ultimate Fantastic Four. Yeah, evil Reed Richards is scary.
Okay. Haven't read Ultimate stuff, but right.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of Reed Richards across the universe.
I remember that now from like Hickman's Fantastic Four run. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a zombie Reed Richards at one point.
Of course there is. Of course there is. D at Dinosaur Number One chimed in with Hawkeye, the Swordsman, and the Sandman.
Yeah, they all sort of had stints with the Avengers, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. And the Sandman, I'm not so sure. Hawkeye, definitely, yeah, he started out as a bad guy, I think. But, yeah, good ones.
We heard from The Hammer Strikes. Randy, he said, Scourge the Executioner. Yes, it was only briefly, but he was on the good side. But he ended as a hero. And that was depicted in the Ragnarok movie.
Yes.
That was cool.
That was cool.
Fun. I liked that film.
It was lots of fun. Yeah. Stupid goose. Jack Rocha, old-fashioned outlaw on the Twitters, chimed in with Plastic Man, former mobster Eel O'Brien, after obtaining powers that makes him one of the most powerful beings in the DC Universe, decided to use that power for good, not evil. Nice.
Well, I wouldn't have... Plastic Man's one I forget is started as a villain. There you go.
Yeah.
Jimmy McGlinchey from Ireland, he said, Major Disaster, great character in Joe Kelly's run in JLA. Yeah, he's been all over the place, a villain, a joke, a hero, and then a villain again.
Mm. I like your characterization as joke. Abad, at AbudF09, chimed in with a very Doom Patrol-centric answer, and he said, oh, that would be Madame Rouge.
Yes.
Not Rogue, but yeah, definitely Rouge this time. Yeah, when she started out bad and then went good and then went bad again.
Tim Price, he's, what, 15 answers or something?
He's not a frack.
Yeah, he said, no, wait, Hawkeye, definitely. Oh, but Hawkeye was only a villain because of Black Widow. So Black Widow, definitely. And he said, hey, Hawkeye joined at the same time as Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, and so they both have relapsed into villainy. So Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch... definitely. But don't the X-Men get mind controlled to be villains every other month? Does that count? But not Spider-Man. According to my favorite newspaper, the Daily Bugle, that threat or menace is a villain through and through. Everything else is fake news. Thanks, Tim.
I'll say yes to all of that, Tim. Well done. Jonathan Dye chimed in with Magneto, or Magneto, whichever. He's the most morally complex character in all of comics, and I love it so much.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Dragon Prince Rob at Evil Kip. He said Magneto or Magneto. I'm doing it now. Magneto. I've always loved his ambiguity and amazing lines. Just fantastic.
Yeah. That is a good call for Magneto from those guys, because it's like, yeah, he's like Xavier, but kind of a little bit darker. You know, he's willing to do the bad stuff for the good of mutant kind, I guess. And then sometimes he just goes full batshit crazy bad. So,
yeah.
Sean Ross from the Secret Wars and Beyond podcast chimed in with Diamond Lil from Alpha Flight, made a great turn from villain to hero. Okay.
I do not know Diamond Lil.
No, I'm well aware of Alpha Flight, but not so much Lil. No. Hmm.
We heard from Juby at Seminole DVM, and he said, or she said, Emma Frost. Juby could be the cat. There's a picture of a cat in the...
Yes.
Emma Frost. Yeah, that's a good one. Villain and then sexy hero and sexy villain. Sexy.
Yeah. Mm. Over on the Facebook page, Craig Mack chimed in with Maxima. Now... is Maxima's is she a Daxamite in the Superman books?
Not a Daxamite. She's from a planet called Almorak, if I remember correctly. And yeah, she came to Earth basically to she was looking for a mate and wanted Superman to marry her. And she was fairly aggressive. And then eventually she joined the Justice League for a bit. So fairly a nuanced character, but she's good.
Okay. Cool.
We heard from Baruch Nahon, and I've butchered your name, I'm sorry, Baruch. But you said Adam Warlock. Was he a villain? I don't recall that, but I haven't read all that classic 70s stuff.
Nor have I, no. So he may have started out as a bad guy. I don't know, but we'll take your word for it, Baruch. A blind spot for me.
Yeah. And let's have one letter before we give our own answers. So we've heard from Dr. Ange, and he said, just a quick missive. Another great show, especially given the fact that you guys are covering these burn issues. Tough assignment. Here are two things I loved about this episode. Mike's loud, cleared, annoyed. Mm-hmm. Pitch perfect. And Flanger's refusal to play the dun-dun-dun. Both show your dedication to and distaste of the material. And frankly, I am impressed with the former and agreement with the latter. As for the question of the week, first off, if anyone says their favourite hero to villain movies, Hawk to Monarch, they need a sucker punch to the gut. And I'm just the resin to deliver it. Please forward me their address. As for me, well, no one said that, fortunately. Mm. As for me, my favourite villain to hero move is Big Barda from Fury to Hero. Fave hero to villain move, Mento, because let's face it, Mento was never a hero. Thanks for the continued awesomeness. Oh, thank you.
Look, if it's just been said by a doctor, it's official, but Mento was never a hero. You heard it here first, folks. Dr. Ange. One out of one medical professionals that are a fan of this show agree that Mento was never a hero.
It's funny that the other medical professional also mentioned Mento.
Oh, yeah. Damn it. Damn it.
I wonder if they self-medicating, perhaps.
Right. Okay, well, 50% of medical professionals that are fans of this show agree that Mento was never a hero. There we go.
We've got one more on the Twitter, and that's Trish N at Trish616, and she said, always Deadpool.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did start out as a bad guy. He's still a bit of a bad guy in some ways, but yeah. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for chiming in. Paul, what's your favourite heel turn or, you know, path to redemption?
It's got to be The Shade from Starman. So, oh, okay. You know, yeah, one of, you know, Barry Allen, The Flash's classic rogues, and he became a very, very interesting sort of, no, I don't, he's not fully a hero, but he's certainly on the side of the Angels in the Starman series, you know, for by the end of it all. So, yeah, a great character with great backstory, really fleshed out by James Robinson. One of my favourites.
Cool.
What about you?
I'm going to go with Hal Jordan when he became Parallax in Green Lantern. The destruction of Coast City sends him mad. He decides to do something about the fact that the Guardians and the Green Lantern Corps won't help him. So he goes into killing spree and collects all the Green Lantern rings for himself. And yeah, just goes batshit crazy.
Yeah, but then he got better, and then it wasn't really him. So
yeah, I wasn't going to mention that bit, but at the time, the initial bit that was bad was pretty good, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, interesting answers. That looks like it is it for this show. So we'll be back in. I might try and push out some shows a bit faster. So next one will be a DC OCD, and we're going to do Kingdom Come.
Ooh.
And then after that, we'll be back with episode 128, which we're going to do some more John Byrne.
Woohoo! I only say that because we're getting very close to the end of that volume.
We're going to do issue 13 and 14. So,
yeah.
But Mike, do we have a question of the week for next week?
Holy shit, do we ever. That question is, in comics, where a costumed identity has been held by multiple individuals, who was your favourite of these alternates?
What a complex question.
So, kind of like a legacy type character.
Yeah. Or, you know, a Robin.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite Robin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So there are multiple Starmen, weren't there? Or Flashes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Plenty of rich material for answers there. But anyway, if you want to get in touch with us and give us your answer to that question of the week, we will read it out on the next show. But you can contact us via Twitter at WFDpod. You can send us an email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. There's My Greatest Adventure, blogspot.com, Doug's wonderful site with awesome posts. And I think that's it for this episode.
It sure is. Thanks for joining us again, everyone. We'll catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.